Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Elizabeth Hess. Israeli army commanders have met with the leaders of the Jewish settlements in the West Bank after plans to remove up to 15 of the outposts were unveiled by the government. Shaul Goldstein, the deputy head of settlers' counselor, is unhappy with the proposal.
The general told us and the minister to tell us about some procedures they want to make about the dismantling of some of our places. We resisted. We think Jews have the right to live anywhere.
There are some 100 outposts housing around 1,000 residents, though it is unclear how many in total will be destroyed. Their removal is part of the roadmap for peace in the Middle East. People are lining up outside a Manhattan Barnes & Noble bookstore this morning for the start of Senator Hillary Clinton's book tour. Lisa Romanello reports.
Steve from Long Island lined up before dawn and says he's not a Hillary fan, but he respects her.
She's a person, she's a woman who was cheated on, who is expressing, venting through a book that everyone in the world loves to hear dirty laundry and looking forward to reading it just like myself.
Steve says he doesn't think the nation is ready for a female president, but many others in line said they would vote for Hillary Clinton and they believe everything she says. Lisa Romanello, New York.
Police in San Jose and the family of 9-year-old Jeanette Tamayo are celebrating her safe return 3 days after being kidnapped from her own home. Jeanette walked into an East Palo Alto liquor store last night. The store owner recognized her from media reports and contacted police. The suspect remains at large. San Jose Police Chief Bill Lansdowne said she's in good physical condition.
Brought Jeanette back to the San Jose Police Department with her parents. They have been reunited. She is in very good spirits. She has certainly been traumatized over the last 3 days. She has been looked at by medical authorities.
Jeanette's mother and 15-year-old half-brother were both badly beaten in the Friday afternoon incident.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole? Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get maximum strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol.
Yes, Miss Cole. Maximum strength Ambisol. Dent is strong, so the pain is gone.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief. Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue. Without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
A Modesto, California judge may decide today whether to impose a gag order on those involved in the Scott Peterson murder trial. Peterson has been charged in the death of wife Lacey and their unborn child. NASA has canceled today's scheduled launch of the Mars Expedition rover after thundershowers were spotted moving towards the launch pad. Another attempt will be made tomorrow to send the first of two unmanned craft on its way to Mars. An American soldier is dead after attackers opened fire at a traffic control checkpoint along the Iraqi-Syria border. U.S. troops returned fire, killing one of the attackers and capturing a second one.
I have a question for the men out there. What do you think your odds are of developing prostate problems? 1 in 1,000? 1 in 300? Actually, my doctor told me they're 1 in 3. But you can help beat those odds with One A Day Men's Health Formula. One A Day Men's is a complete multivitamin with 21 nutrients plus lycopene, which Harvard studies have linked to prostate health. So now that you know your risk, help beat the odds. Take One A Day Men's Health, the multivitamin with more for your health.
Analysts are hoping the start of the confession season won't chase the bulls away from Wall Street. Since hitting their lows for the year in early March, three major market averages have all gained at least 20%, meeting the market definition of a bull market. But some strategists caution the stock market may be ready for a correction because stocks have risen too far and too fast in too short a time. The rock musical Hairspray stole the show at the 57th annual Tony Awards, racking up 8 of the coveted theater awards. Hairspray swept the major musical categories, including Best Musical, Best Actor, and Best Actress. Marissa Jarrett Winokur won a Tony for her role as Tracy Turnblad in the hit musical Hairspray.
If a 4'11" chubby New York girl can be a leading lady in a Broadway show and win a Tony, then anything can happen. Thank you.
The show also won Best Direction and Best Original Score. This is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Clippity-clop, clippity-clop. Does your car sound like the Clydesdales in Fast Forward? The problem could be unhealthy joints. No, not the horses, your cars. When we come back, I'll tell you all about it. We've all seen the Tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first until we tested 6 Tornado units. And in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your Tornado unit today. Or visit TornadoAir.com. That clacking could be a sign of old age in your car's CV or constant velocity joints. These flexible joints allow drive shafts and axles to steer cars smoothly. But if they don't function properly, axles could freeze up or even fall off. How do you recognize faulty CV joints? Hopping and clicking when turning and clunking when accelerating are classic signs. And if you can create these noises by putting your car in reverse and backing in a circle, your CV joints are really aching. So communicate these symptoms to your technician. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program, broadcasting coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, streaming from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, S-I-R-U-S, the Sirius satellite that is the new car receiving satellite. And this month they're also coming out with a home radio unit on the Sirius channel 145, our program, and also broadcasting on the live on the internet from ieamericaradio.com. Be sure you have the radio in there, and from tomhartman.com and radiopower.org. Welcome to the program. Today we're going to talk about what is the history of political vision in America. In the first hour, I want to get into the historic political vision, and I've got some we have some fascinating guests, as it were. We're going to hear from William Howard Taft, an actual tape recording of him, Theodore Roosevelt back in the 1905, 1906, actual recordings of him. We've got FDR, Nixon, Reagan, a whole bunch of presidents, a collection of them here for you. And examining the history of political vision in America, I find this stuff fascinating. I hope you do. I'd love some feedback on this, if we should do more or less of this kind of stuff. Our quote for the day: human kindness has never weakened the stamina or softened the fiber of a free people. A nation does not have to be cruel to be tough. Franklin Roosevelt, United States President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. We have an email from Bob. He says, I enjoyed your article, Midnight Ride of the Rabble. And he said, I think you touched on an argument that so few liberals, progressives, Democrats, whatever we're calling ourselves these days, seem willing to make. It's easy to understand why conservatives, cultural, political, or economic, hate big government. I don't understand why more liberals and or Democrats, especially politicians, don't actively champion government activism on historic grounds. All I hear is what tax cuts, a reactionary judiciary, and a smaller federal government might mean for the future of minorities, the poor, the environment, and our aging. More sympathetic I could not be, but a more compelling argument against conservatism can be gleaned not from what might happen, but what has happened. This is really interesting. Bob, in this email to me, is suggesting, and this is one of the things that we're going to visit with some of these sound clips here in this hour, is suggesting that if we look back at the history of the United States, we'll discover that the principles that the Democratic Party has historically championed And where are those champions now? Well, I think that there's a few of them among the candidates who are jockeying for position to run for president. That those positions are the foundational, are in the foundation of liberty and freedom in the United States, as are some conservative positions. I don't think we should throw the baby out with the bathwater. We need some information from both. Anyhow, he says the real opposition to conservatism should be based on American history itself. As a college instructor, I'm painfully aware of how little Americans understand our own history and how this lack of understanding plays beautifully into the hands of the modern conservatives. We don't understand that we are all welfare babies, that we all benefit from government outlays. The greatest leaps in American democracy, this history professor says, were made when liberals, maybe even radicals, partnered up with the federal government, or tried to at least. The birth of the Republican Party in the 1850s, the Civil War and Reconstruction, the populist movement, the progressive movement, the labor movement, the New Deal, the Fair Deal, the rise of the new middle class in the 1950s and 60s, the Great Society, environmental regulation, civil rights, minority and gender protection, these all represent liberal agendas that made use of federal power, Congress, the courts, the Constitution, to advance democracy, opportunity, and a higher quality of life for a larger number of people. He goes on to say, these movements may not have achieved all that their advocates had hoped for, but we are a far better country for them. We are a better country for a strong federal government that has in the past regulated our business, broke down legal and social barriers, promoted democratic involvement, and redistributed wealth by providing funds for Social Security, medical assistance, public education, college funding, environmental protection, and numerous other programs for the middle class as well as the poor. This, he says, is the history which we desperately need to remind Americans of. He goes on to say, I'm not blind to the abuses of federal power, Red Scares, Indian removal, corporate influence, John Ashcroft. For every liberal measure or decision passed down by the President, Congress, or Supreme Court, there are probably 300 benefiting private interests over the public good. But he says, history is on our side. When will the opponents of conservatism embrace it? Bob, an excellent point. What is the history of political vision in America? To start out with on this, let's go back and find my note here. Let's go back to listen to Theodore Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt became president in 1901. He was president from 1901 to 1909. He was known as the Trust Buster because he went after big corporate. He was a Republican. Now listen to what he has to say about the nature of the role of government in private enterprise.
In the last 20 years, an increasing percentage of our people have come to depend on industry for their livelihood.
He starts out, in the last 20 years, an increasing number of our people have come to depend on industry for their livelihood, and then he talks about what that means.
In the last 20
Whoops.
Years,
Sorry about
an
that.
Increasing percentage of our people have come to depend on industry for their livelihood.
Here we go.
As a people, we cannot afford to let any group of citizens or any individual citizens live or labor under conditions which are injurious to the commonwealth.
He talks about the commonwealth being injured if we allow any of our citizens to work under conditions that are harmful. And this is one of the key concepts that as we harm any among us, we harm all of us.
Industry, therefore, must submit to such public regulation.
Industry must submit to such public regulation. Now, this was revolutionary. Consider, this was on the tail end of the Gilded Age, of the era of the robber barons, when they were importing essentially slave laborers from Mexico and from China to work on the railroads. We see now, by the way, that the current administration has a proposal to allow guest workers in who can work below minimum wage. This is something that Teddy Roosevelt, the Republican, would have, you know, was railing against. Here, as he continues, we have to, he says, industry must submit to government regulation.
That will make it a means of life and health, not of death or anything.
That will make it a means of life and health, not of death.
We must protect the crushable elements at the base of our present industrial structure.
We must protect the crushable element at the base of our industrial structure. That's the workers, the individuals, the people who are working.
We stand for a living wage.
We stand for a living wage. Teddy Roosevelt said in 1905, we stand for a living wage. I'm not sure about the rest of the presidential candidates. I don't believe that I've heard any of them speak of living wage. I know that here in Vermont for the last 6 or 8 years, Howard Dean has been championing a living wage. And, in fact, we have, I believe that we have living wage law here in Vermont. If not, it's certainly a voluntary thing. Louise is shaking her head. No, it's very, very common that, well, so what is a living wage? Well, Teddy Roosevelt, 1905, what did he say was a living wage?
That's abnormal if they fail to provide a living for those who devote their time and energy to industrial occupation.
Wages are subnormal if
the monetary equivalent of a living wage varies according to local conditions.
It's local.
But must include enough to secure the elements of a normal standard of living.
A normal standard of living.
Standard high enough to make morality possible.
Make morality possible. To provide for education.
Care for immature members of the family.
To care for children.
To maintain the family during periods of sickness.
Take care of sickness.
And to permit a reasonable saving for old age.
And permit a saving for old age. These are the things that Teddy Roosevelt said would be necessary to define a wage as a living wage. Can people working at McDonald's pay for their health care out of their wage? Can they pay for their retirement out of their wage? Our question for this hour, what is the history of political vision in America? Back to Teddy Roosevelt as he finishes defining what a living wage is.
Hours of excessive if they fail to afford the worker sufficient time to recuperate and return to his work.
Hours are excessive if a worker can't return to his employment after resting refreshed.
Told the seven-day working week is abnormal. Told that 1 day of rest in seven should be provided by law.
He says 1 day of rest in seven should be provided by law, that a seven-day working week is abnormal and destructive. Our quote from the day for the day from Franklin Roosevelt, human kindness has never weakened the stamina or softened the fiber of a free people. A nation does not have to be cruel to be tough. Now, Teddy Roosevelt, in calling for a living wage, and by the way, these recordings, that recording and the one that's going to follow it and the recording of Howard William Howard Taft were all made by the Edison Record Company. They, back then, people bought political speeches on records and the phonograph records. These were the old cylinders. So Teddy Roosevelt, the Republican Roosevelt, first pointed out that industry must submit itself to government regulation, that there must be a six-day work week rather than a seven-day work week, that persons should not have to work more than 8 hours a day. That part was not in this particular clip, but it was in that speech. The speech was rather much longer than I could use here on the show. And he suggested that a living wage was one that would provide, that would be enough money for a person to have a reasonable standard of living based on the local economy, to pay for the education of their children, to pay for their health care, and to pay for their own retirement. Now, we have, you know, modern-day conservatives running around going, oh, we should kill off Social Security. The government has no business being in the business of paying for people's retirement. But how can you save for retirement on a minimum wage paycheck? More than half the workers in America are living hand-to-mouth, are in debt, rather than having a net positive equity. So Roosevelt, in starting out and calling for his living wage, then went on, this is actually from another speech given a little later in his administration, he went on to rail about corporate power as a form of feudalism. Now, I thought when I first started writing about this a couple of years ago, when I wrote Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Power and the Theft of Human Rights, that I had come up with a new idea. And about halfway through the book, I came across some of Roosevelt's speeches and realized that this wasn't a new idea at all, that people had been talking about this in the United States. Well, actually, as I was when I was writing the book, I came across this narrative of the Boston Tea Party by one of the guys who was actually there. George Robert Twelvetree Hughes, and he talks about the East India Company as a feudal power, and then Teddy Roosevelt, 1902, talking about feudalism in the United States. So we're going to get to that quote right after this break. Stay tuned with the Tom Hartman Program. We'll return in just a few moments.
I was 12, my father was killed in an industrial accident at a
vacant lot
where he worked. My mother insisted I stay in
the highway on-ramp
to get an education. So she took a job waiting tables at a
parking garage
to support us. She worked double shifts. And on her break, she would pick me up from
the highway on-ramp
and drop me off at the big
office building.
And I'd spend hours and hours just reading books. I remember every Saturday we'd have breakfast at the
parking garage.
And I'd tell her what I had read. And her eyes would just light up because she knew I'd end up in college, not working at the
vacant lot
like my dad.
When we lose a historic place, we lose a part of who we are. To learn how you can help protect places in your community, visit nationaltrust.org. History is in our hands. A message brought to you by the National Trust for Historic Preservation and the Ad Council.
Attention all plaintiffs. If personal injury, medical malpractice, accident, or other disaster has left you helpless and desperate, call now 800-586-5493 and receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Express lawsuit funding provides no risk, no payments needed cash to people with pending lawsuits. The money is yours until your case settles. You pay nothing. We only collect when your lawsuit settles. Call us now. 800-586-5493. Your lawsuit has merit, and the cash is yours to do with whatever you need. Take care of living expenses, credit cards, car payments. No payments needed until your case settles. No employment requirements. No credit checks. Call now. 800-586-5493. Your cash is waiting for your call. Express Lawsuit Funding is waiting to help you. Call 800-586-5493.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, when I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained. They rode us all the way into New Orleans.
And welcome back. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where we still honor we the people instead of they, the transnational corporations who own, it seems, so much of our media. Somebody in our chat room, by the way, if you want to get to the chat room, go to tomhartman.com, click on the radio show link, and when you get on the radio show homepage, click on the chat room link. The message board is a separate thing. The message board has got about 20,000 messages on it, a whole bunch of people in there participating. You're welcome to post messages there, too. We read those and very often read them on the air. The chat room is live and interactive, and there's a bunch of folks in there right now. And somebody asked a question asking if Roosevelt was successful in getting his efforts through. First of all, let's make sure everybody realizes we've been listening to Teddy Roosevelt, not Franklin Roosevelt. There are two Roosevelts who've been president of the United States. They were distant cousins, but essentially didn't know each other. And the first was Theodore Roosevelt, and he was successful in some areas. He got the Tillman Act passed, for example. I believe it was in 1907. It was during his time as president, 1901 to 1909. And the Tillman Act made it a crime federally, nationally. Now, prior to this time, most states had these laws, and in the 1880s, states started losing these laws. And so Roosevelt came in and said, we need to pass a law to make it a crime for a corporation to give money to a politician. And that law is still on the books, by the way, the Tillman Act. Look it up. It's not enforced, but it's still on the books. What is the history of the political vision of America? Let's go back to Teddy Roosevelt. This is another speech of his where he talks about feudalism. What would be feudalism in America? Where did it come from? What is it?
The difference between Mr. Wilson and myself.
The other day, in a speech at Sioux Falls, Mr. Wilson stated his position when he said that the history of government, the history of liberty, was the history of the limitation of governmental power.
Now, this is a really important one because this is almost the exact same thing that Ronald Reagan said when he came into office. Roosevelt was campaigning against Wilson. This is from a recording in 1915. When he had left the Republican Party and he was with the populists and referred to himself as a progressive. And Woodrow Wilson said, the history of liberty was the history of the constraining or the limiting of governmental power. And Teddy Roosevelt starts out by saying, there's a clear difference between me and Wilson. Wilson says that the history of liberty is the history of restraining government power. And that has become conventional wisdom ever since Ronald Reagan. Everybody seems to think that, or many people seem to think that, and it's certainly the basic mantra of the so-called conservatives. Now let's hear what Roosevelt has to say about that.
This is true as an academic statement.
It's true only academically.
In the past.
In the past.
It is not true as a statement affecting the present.
It is not true.
It is true of the history of medieval Europe. It is not true of the history of 20th century America.
It is true in the history of medieval Europe that the history of liberty was the history of the controlling or limiting of the power of government, but it is not true in the United States. Now, why would that be, Mr. Roosevelt?
In the days when all governmental power existed exclusively in the king or in the baronage, and when the people had no shred of that power in their own hands.
Back when only the kings held power and the people had no shred of power in their own hands, Roosevelt says.
Then it undoubtedly was true.
Then it was true.
The history of liberty was the history of the limitation of the governmental power of the outsiders who possessed that.
Then it was true. But is it true now? We don't think so. Roosevelt will explain what he's talking about right after this break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is the Tom Harpin radio program on the IE America Radio Network.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton. Members of the Graphics Communications International Union and Unite came together for a joint rally outside a convention at the Moscone Center in downtown San Francisco yesterday. Inside, the world's largest commercial printer, Quebecor World, was presenting an award to Cintas, a Cincinnati-based laundry and uniform company.
Quebecor says that everybody in America touches a Quebecor product once a day. We think it's time that everybody in America hears how Quebecor is treating workers.
Jennifer Love of the AFL-CIO says that Quebecor World often refuses to bargain with its unions.
This is a great moment when one anti-union company is rewarding another. Quebecor World is sponsoring a luncheon at the annual catalog conference, which is honoring catalogs, one of which is produced by Cintas Corporation.
With its 17,000 production workers at more than 300 plants, Cintas is the largest provider of uniform rentals in the nation. And according to Leah Rothstein of United in Northern California, it's also among the most anti-worker.
They spend tons of money fighting unions. They hire consultants. They intimidate. They fire. They threaten their workers to stop them from unionizing.
Both unions say they'll keep up the pressure until both companies change their ways.
British resistance to a proposed European Union Charter of Labor Rights is gaining strength. The Confederation of British Industry, one of the country's largest business lobbies, says a provision in the charter requires that all temporary workers be afforded the same pay and benefits after 6 weeks on a job. Speaking for its members, who employ more than 6 million British workers, the CBI says such a right would lead to hiring freezes and job cuts, as it would take the value out of short-term employment. Last week, the British government announced it would block the implementation of an EU Bill of Labor Rights if the rights of workers to organize and strike were not deleted from the charter.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Tired of the same old conservative blather on talk radio? Want a different slant on politics in the world than what's offered up by right-wing wacko talk show hosts? Then join me, Peter Werby, 2 to 5 p.m. It's my new time. That's Eastern Time. Weekdays for an alternative not often heard on the AM band. If you want to hear a talk show host that opposes Bush's wars, challenges corporate rule, defends the interests of working people, the environment, and a woman's right to choose, then join me, Peter Werby, in my new time slot, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Common Sense from the Radical Middle. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're listening to Theodore Roosevelt, the Republican President of the United States, back in the era of 1901 to 1909. And this little bit here is from a later speech of his, 1915, in which he had just started out saying that Woodrow Wilson had said that the history of liberty was the history of the limiting of the power of government, which is the conservative, modern-day conservative mantra. And no, Roosevelt says, that's not the case. He says, in feudal Europe, that was the case. And in times of kings, that was the case. But we have a new kind of government here in the United States. It is we the people. Our question in this hour, what is the history of political vision in the United States of America? Back to Teddy Roosevelt.
But today, the people have actually or potentially the entire governmental power. It is theirs to use and to exercise if they choose to use and to exercise.
The people have
it
the power.
It offers the only adequate instrument with which they can work for the betterment, for the uplifting of the masses of our the liberty of which Mr. Wilson speaks.
The liberty that Wilson is speaking of.
Means merely the liberty of some great first magnate to do that which he is not entitled to.
Now, this is this part, this is, you know, Roosevelt just said that liberty, that the history of the limitation of government is not the history of liberty in the United States, because in the United States, we the people have the power of government in our hand. It is we the people. So what is liberty if limiting the power of government in the minds of Mr. Wilson and of the today's modern-day conservatives? What does that liberty mean? Well, Roosevelt says, well, it means the liberty of a truck magnate to do whatever he wants with his employees. He goes on to talk about what when conservatives talk about liberty, when they talk about limiting the ability of we the people through our government to restrain predatory elements within our government, what kind of liberty, that liberty is just a code word, and what it really means.
It means merely the liberty of some factory owner to work haggard women over hours for underpaid and himself to pocket the profit.
It means the liberty of a factory owner to work haggard women overworked and underpaid and for himself to pocket the profit. That is what liberty means, Teddy Roosevelt says, when the conservatives, when the neoconservatives suggest that the limitation of power is liberty. What else might liberty be?
It means the liberty of the factory owner to close his operative into some crazy death trap on a shop floor where, if fire starts, the slaughter is immense.
The liberty to send workers into the death trap on the factory floor.
It means the liberty of the big factory owner who's conscienceless and unscrupulous to work his men and women under conditions which seep into their lives like a massacre. It means the liberty of even less conscientious factory owners to make their money out of the toil, the labor of little children. Men of this stamp are the men whose liberty would be preserved by Mr. Wilson.
Those men of this camp, of the people who would basically run factories as slave labor shops, are the ones who would benefit from the liberty spoken of, Roosevelt says, by his political opponent, Mr. Wilson.
Men of this stamp are the men whose liberty would be preserved by the limitation of governmental power.
Men of this camp would be assisted by the limitation of governmental power.
We propose, on the contrary, to extend governmental power in order to secure the liberty of the wage workers, of the men and women who toil in industry, to save the liberty of the oppressed from the oppressor.
We propose to extend liberty by extending governmental power to protect workers, President Roosevelt, the Republican President Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt said.
Mr. Wilson stands for the liberty of the oppressor to oppress. We stand for the limitation of his liberty, thus to oppress those who are weaker than himself.
That is such an important point there. Mr. Wilson stands for the liberty of the factory worker, of the factory owner, and Mr. Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt, says we stand for the liberty of the workers.
Talk Yes. 1-800-825-5937 is the number. Today our question, what is the history of political vision in America? We still have Franklin Roosevelt, Eisenhower, Nixon, JFK, Reagan, and Barry Goldwater to hear from. Our question, oh, I just mentioned our question, and Billy in Santa Cruz has called 1-800-TALK-YES to be on the program today. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program, Billy.
Thank you, Tom. Tom.
What's up?
Go ahead. Well.
Oh, go ahead. I was just saying, what's up?
Well, what's up is this. You're making a great argument, and it's easy to prove. And I want to prove it from the other direction, that what we need from government is protection from the corporates. And like you, by the way, I'm from the radical middle, because I'm not anti-corporate. I'm just aware that you've got to control people when they're given that power. And here's the easy argument to make. You know, in Santa Cruz, we're trying to get something called a living wage, not minimum wage, because that's minimum. But a living wage. We want people to be able to live. And
Billy, did you hear Franklin? Did you hear Teddy Roosevelt talking about a living wage about 15, 20 minutes ago,
or did
you just tune in?
Isn't that something?
Yeah, I mean, he introduced that phrase in 1904.
And we still don't have it. And
right.
Let's look at why. And here's the point I want to make. This is really, I think, glaring. And tell me if I'm wrong. But as I understand it, the selfish, conservative, Republican types, and I'm not as nice about it as you are, I think they're really selfish. I think that's what it's about. As I understand it, they would pay as little as possible. You see, it's some humans have a problem about selfishness. For example, the Gulag was built by slave labor. The Nazis used slave labor. And in America, these same people who argue about the power of government to protect the worker, they really don't want to be told what to pay somebody. Their idea is, let's see how little we can pay. Well,
this is the new guest worker proposal, Billy. This is the new guest worker proposal from this administration, that we expand the number of immigrants, particularly from Mexico, allowed to come into the United States, that they be classified as guest workers, and that they therefore be exempted from minimum wage requirements.
So what's the number? Is it slavery? If I just feed you, is that enough? Remember, these same crazy capitalists, they'd work children of 8, 9, 10, and 12 if we let them until...
Well, they certainly were back in 1907.
That's the way it was in America, not just Vietnam.
Yep, it was in 1907 when Roosevelt was giving this speech. That was the State of the Union.
So, Tom, let us... Every time we hear from one of these people who are against the minimum wage and want the freedom for the... businessman completely. Let's remember, these people are your would-be slaveholders. This is today's version of Simon Legree. These are very mean and selfish people, and we need to label them so.
I thank you for doing so, Billy. That's a good point and well taken. Billy in Santa Cruz, thank you for calling in and for dropping by our radio home. This is the Tom Hartman program, and this hour we're asking, what is the history of political vision in America? William Howard Taft was president of the United States from 1909 to 1913, another Republican. And he had some interesting thoughts on what is a monopoly. And I remember the game Monopoly actually emerged about that time, right around the turn of the 20th century, about 100 years ago, the game Monopoly became out and became popular. And Monopoly was illegal. I think it was 1881. It was either 1880 or 1881 that Senator Sherman got passed Senate Bill No. 1, which later came to be known as the Sherman Antitrust Act, another law that is still on the books that Reagan essentially suspended enforcement of and has not functionally been enforced ever since. And here is William Howard Taft, Republican President of the United States, 1910, describing the nature of what the FCC has just allowed in our media empires. And listen to this.
The combination of capital and large plants to manufacture goods with the greatest economy is necessary to material progress. When, however, such combinations are not based on any economic principle, but are made merely for the purpose of controlling the market, to maintain or raise prices, restrict output, and drive out competitors, the public derives no benefit, and we have a monopoly. Many enterprises have been organized on the theory that mere aggregation of all or nearly all existing plants in a line of manufacture without regard to economy of production destroys competition.
And that was the whole point. That was the goal of these many enterprises that he talked about, is destroying competition. What is the history of the political vision in America? Our quote, by the way, for this hour on the Tom Hartman program from Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who we're going to hear from a little bit later. Human kindness has never weakened the stamina or softened the fiber of a free people. A nation does not have to be cruel to be tough. Well, Franklin Roosevelt came along as president a few years after William Howard Taft. In between, there was a fellow who was one of America's great philosophers, Alexander Michael John, M-E-I-K-L-E-J-O-H-N. And he wrote a marvelous book that he first wrote in 1924, titled What Does America Mean? It's still in print. And in this book, Alexander Michael John talks about what is a democracy. And this is where we see the real vision of democracy in America, what a democracy is, what a democracy would mean, emerging. You call it a modern liberal democracy. That word is so loaded. In Europe, it means something completely different than it means here, for example. Anyhow, here's Alexander Michael John. He says, democracy is, quote, a society which is carrying an enterprise in which all of its members have a genuine share, end quote. He says, a democracy is a society in which all of its members are spiritually alive. They are all active in appreciation, in insight. Now, the opposite of democracy, according to Alexander Michael John in 1924, the opposite of democracy is aristocracy. Now, many people think we left behind aristocracy in Europe 227 years ago. But Michael John says no. He says an aristocrat is one who believes that genuine human living is out of the reach of the mass of people. They, as against we, whether because of lack of capacity or lack of favorable circumstance, are not really human beings. He says, now let's compare democracy and aristocracy. He says, the striving of a democracy is always against dullness. At every point, it's favorable to sensitiveness. It is forever at war with stupidity. Its one overmastering ambition is the building up of intelligence, of insight, from one end of the community to the other. The purpose of a democracy, Michael John says, is that every member of the community shall, to the full measure of his capacity, share with the leaders of the community in the enterprise which all of us have in common. If any man fails, we all fail. We are brothers in a common cause. It is that cause which defines democracy. It is only in relation to that cause that we can understand liberty. Now what, in contrast, of the aristocrat? At every turn in our American life today, Michael John says, the democratic enterprise is blocked and undermined by the beliefs and attitudes of the aristocrat. Yes, they're still with us. No person in a democracy is willing that any human being should go through his few years on this earth without being stirred by beauty, excited by meaning, challenged and aroused by perplexing endeavor. Aristocracy, on the other hand, reserves these experiences for the few, says Michael John. Always it divides a society into two groups, the upper few who live as if they were human beings, and the vast lower multitude who live and die like sheep. To the members of the first group are assigned the experiences of thinking, appreciating, planning, directing, taking responsibility. But the second group, according to the aristocrats and the aristocratic worldview, the second group are wards, dependents, slaves, morons, workmen, incompetents. It is not for them to know what they are doing, end quote. Michael John goes on to say that the aristocrat views the workers in a particular way. He says their existence is stated in passive terms, obedience, subservience, being provided for. They are the bodies of men. The few aristocrats are the spirits. He says, in summarizing this chapter, he says, our business gains. Now, keep in mind, this was written on the tail end of right after, you know, Roosevelt gave that speech, well, about 10 years after Roosevelt gave that speech, he says, 9 years after, he says, our business gains were won at an enormous price. That price is the large-scale denial of human living. It is the destruction of democracy. Alexander Michael John, What Does America Mean? 1924, the first edition was written. The question for this hour, what is the history of political vision in the United States? Our quote for this hour defines the political vision of the United States, in my opinion. From Franklin Roosevelt, human kindness has never weakened the stamina or softened the fiber of a free people. A nation does not have to be cruel to be tough. We're examining the history of political vision in America. In the next hour, we're going to hear from FDR, Eisenhower, Nixon, JFK, and Reagan. Some really interesting stuff. Got a few after this break, too. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Nice drive, Jim.
Ah, thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
I have a question for the men out there. What do you think your odds are of developing prostate problems? 1 in 1,000? 1 in 300? Actually, my doctor told me they're 1 in 3. But you can help beat those odds with One-A-Day Men's Health Formula. One-A-Day Men's is a complete multivitamin with 21 nutrients plus lycopene, which Harvard studies have linked to prostate health. So now that you know your risk, help beat the odds. Take One-A-Day Men's Health, the multivitamin with more for your health.
Hey, Steve?
Yeah?
I'm taking Nicorette like you said, but right now I really need a cigarette. And according to my schedule, I'm not supposed to take another piece for 2 hours. So what should I do? And don't tell me to tough it out, because it's not going to be pretty.
Take an extra piece?
Good idea.
When a really tough craving hits, just take an extra piece of Nicorette. As soon as you bite down, it delivers the medicine you need. Nicorette helps you quit one craving at a time. Use as directed. Follow dosing schedule. Individual results may vary. Support program can improve success rate.
If you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
One day a mother come to a prison to see an erring but precious son. She told the warden how much she loved him. It did not matter what he had done.
Talk radio for the rest of us. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome back. We're talking about what is the history of political vision in America. Brian, you can turn that music down. What is the history of political vision in America? And when does the music ever end? Brian, who's running the board there. Thank you, Brian. Oh, boy. What is the vision of political history in America? We have a fascinating quote here from from Franklin Delano Roosevelt. This is pre-World War II. Well, I'll let it just speak for itself.
We're not a warlike people. We've never sought glory as a nation of warriors. We're not interested in aggression. We are not interested, as the dictators are, in looting. We do not covet one square inch of the territory of any other nation.
And that was the definite statement of principle at one point. Now, where are we going with this? The hope that I want to share with you in this program, in this hour and the next, is that we swung to the the United States swung to the right during the second administration, during the Adams administration. George Washington was pretty much a centrist. He really didn't buy into the whole Federalist thing. He was a military guy. Some say he wasn't all that bright. I think he was a very intelligent man. And he just, you know, he didn't really go along with the Federalists. And John Adams came in, charged in 1796, as I recall, and passed the Alien and Sedition Act, the equivalent of the Patriot Act. And started throwing people in jail for disagreeing with him in the newspapers. And then we swung back away from that with Jefferson. That swing has happened 3 times in American history. It's about to happen again. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Elizabeth Hess. If there is to be a change of regime in Iran, the movement will probably begin inside that country. That's the word from Secretary of State Colin Powell.
It's up to the Iranian people to decide what's going to happen in that country. There's quite a bit of churning taking place inside Iran.
A 9-year-old San Jose, California girl, Jeanette Tamayo, who has been kidnapped from her home Friday, has turned up safe. Frank Munich reports.
San Jose police say the little girl appeared inside an East Palo Alto liquor store at around 10:30 last night, asking to call her family. The owner called police. Tamayo is in good condition this morning and in protective police custody. Police have now locked down a nearby neighborhood in an intensive search. Frank Munich, San Francisco.
The California judge presiding over the Scott Peterson double murder case may decide as soon as today if he'll issue a gag order. The gag order could apply just to the lawyers or may include anyone connected to the case. Assistant District Attorney John Gould says a gag order is a cumbersome but needed step to ensure the case is tried in the courtroom, not the media.
This case is going to end up before, as I see it, a jury, 12 people who are going to have to make a decision. And what I want those people to be is not biased for me, not biased for the defense based on what they hear in the media.
Peterson's lawyers argued a gag order will only keep the people with the facts from talking to the media and allow for even more speculative news reporting. A pond in Frederick, Maryland is being drained as part of the ongoing investigation of the 2001 anthrax by mail attacks. Frederick is where the former U.S. Army scientist Stephen Hatfield, who has been labeled a person of interest in the attacks, used to live. A close friend of his says the FBI can drain every ocean in the world and still come up dry in trying to link him to the anthrax murders.
If the FBI wants to go drain the pond, let them go drain it. Let them drain every pond on the face of the earth. Let them drain the Pacific Ocean. They are not going to find any evidence that Steve Hatfield was the anthrax killer because he was not involved in any way.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole? Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get maximum strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol.
Yes, Miss Cole. Maximum strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief. Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue. Without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
Another American soldier has been killed in Iraq at a checkpoint on the Syrian border. In a statement, the U.S. military says the attackers drove up in a vehicle and requested help from a passenger they claimed was ill. Two people armed with pistols then got out and shot the soldier. The statement says American troops returned fire, killing one attacker and apprehending a second one. Health officials are investigating after 28 people in three states apparently contracted the monkeypox virus, a smallpox-like disease. The patients in Wisconsin, Indiana, and Illinois each had contact with prairie dogs.
This week on E! He may be a one-woman man, but he still spends like a bachelor. It's good to be Ben Affleck. Plus, it's the in-your-face world of the paparazzi. Celebrities Uncensored.
Get the camera out of my face!
And if you thought the show was hot and heavy, wait till you see what went on when the cameras went off. The E! True Hollywood Story of Melrose Place. It's all new, all true, every night this week on E!
Dozens of people are lining up outside a Manhattan Barnes & Noble bookstore for the start of Senator Hillary Clinton's book tour. Some admit they just like to collect autographs, but others are proud fans of the New York senator.
I think Hillary Clinton's a very intelligent, classy lady. I admire her for
what she's doing.
I think she is triumphed in so many areas, motherhood, first lady, politics, celebrity. She's great.
The former First Lady's book chronicles both the personal and political aspects of her time in the White House, including her husband, former President Clinton's scandalous affair with Monica Lewinsky. The Spurs have managed to reclaim their home court advantage in the NBA Finals with an 84-79 victory over the Nets in New Jersey. By the half, the two teams had scored only 63 total points, the lowest first-half outpoint in finals history. Game 4 is set for Wednesday. I'm Monica DeSantis, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Petri dishes, grandma's parlor, and well-used tennis shoes. All breeding grounds for yucky mold. Don't wrinkle your nose, because you've got one, too, in your car. Come back. I'll tell you where.
Rain-X now has a lot of car waxes specially designed to protect your car's finish, not just to make it shiny and look good. Any wax can do that. Rain-X car waxes form a protective polymer seal over your car. The same way Rain-X windshield treatment repels water, Rain-X's new line of car waxes repel rain, road grime, UV rays, even tar. For a tough, protective barrier that does more than just keep your car's finish looking great, check out Rain-X's new line of car wax. Rain-X, protection you can see.
Your car's heater and air conditioner provide the perfect breeding ground for smelly mold and mildew. Here's a tip to eliminate these odors. Disconnect the AC compressor before starting your car in the morning. Set the emergency brake and crank your engine. Run your AC on max and in the recirculation mode. Then spray a small can of Lysol in the passenger's foot area behind the glove compartment. Let dry 1 hour and reconnect the compressor. Voila! A car that will smell fresher all season. Now for those tennis shoes. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us. Brought to you by Rain-X Wax, the ultimate shield.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle, this is the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the People's Republic of Vermont, streaming coast to coast on terrestrial land-based radio stations, from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, and broadcasting live on the Internet from IEAmericaRadio.com, RadioPower.org, TomHartman.com, and so on. Welcome. Welcome back to our program. We are looking at what is the history of political vision in America. We've been listening to Theodore Roosevelt and William Howard Taft, two of the first two presidents of the 20th century in the United States, commenting about what they saw as the role of government in balancing what Roosevelt called the feudal power of corporations, of large corporations. Now, let me make it very clear. I am not anti-corporate. I have started and run corporations myself. I am, however, opposed to any entity in our society which has a single purpose. In the case of a corporation, that single purpose is profit. In the case of a church, that single purpose is the propagation of religion. Any entity that has a single purpose, having enough power to rise up and take control of our government. And I believe we are there right now, where government has become the dog that gets wagged by the tail of the corporations. And this is not healthy to democracy. And this is what these folks were talking about back then. Now, in our chat room, we've got a whole bunch of folks. If you go to TomHartman.com and click on the radio show link and then click on the chat room link, it'll take you to the International Trade Forum on CompuServe. You click on the chat button and it'll pop open the chat room. And there's a bunch of folks in there, one of them in Steinach, Germany, where I used to live in 1986. And hello, vielen Grüße to alle to alles in Deutschland. And anyhow, a couple of folks have been asking questions in the chat room about, or making comments like, you know, I'm not so concerned about a vision, I just want to get Bush out, or things like that. I think that any effective motivation strategy has to have two components. It has to have a component of moving away from pain. Yeah, let's stop the ongoing corporatization of American government, the giveaway, the $150 billion a year corporate welfare schemes, for example, that now with these new Halliburton contracts and the stuff in Iraq have become over a $200 billion a year welfare, corporate welfare scheme. Let's stop that stuff. Let's take back our country. Yes, I'm all in favor of that. But I think that we also have to have a positive vision. What is it that the Democratic Party or the progressives or the Greens, what would the people who are not identifying themselves as the neoconservatives say is their vision? And in fact, a little later on, we're going to get into what actually is the historic Republican vision. It is not what is being played out today by these the people who are on this current administration. It is not even the historic Republican vision, as you are hearing. A couple of weeks ago, we played some extensive clips from Dwight Eisenhower's farewell address. I don't want to repeat them. It's boring radio and all that, but we'll get back to those in a few months probably. But just what? Well, we'll get to that. Anyhow, we've worked our way up to the 1930s, and here we have President Franklin Roosevelt beginning to articulate the vision of what democracy could be. What Alexander Michael John said, democracy is when everybody has an opportunity to participate as fully alive human beings and citizens. And Theodore Roosevelt said, and everybody has the ability to earn a living wage, where they can pay for their own children's education, they can pay for their own health care, and they can pay for their own retirement fully. So now Franklin Roosevelt, in the 1930s, is beginning to define this vision. He first starts out with his identification of the problem.
I see one third of a nation ill housed, ill clad, ill nourished.
And it's not that different now, by the way. In fact, it was interesting. I saw the other day that the number of people, the actual raw number of people in the United States who were unemployed during the Great Depression is roughly the same number of people as are unemployed today. It's just that the country had half as many people in it, so as a percentage they were smaller. But millions and millions of people.
Better the occasional fault of a government that lives in a spirit of charity than the consistent omission of a government frozen in the ice of its own indifference.
This was Franklin Roosevelt announcing the New Deal, his concept that a government that occasionally makes mistakes, that engages in excesses in seeing to it that its citizens can survive, that those mistakes are not as egregious as the mistakes of a government that is, as he says, frozen in its own indifference. So a new vision was beginning to form on the left with Roosevelt. And then along came Eisenhower, Dwight D. Eisenhower. And as I said a couple of weeks ago, we played the clips from his farewell where he talked about the need for a vision of peace for America. This the man who was the commander of all Allied forces in Europe. 15 months after, as his son told Larry King,
hi everybody, Doug Steffen here. It looks like we're having some minor technical problems here at the program. But please stick around. We've dispatched the whole Doug Steffen Good Day technical staff to get this thing fixed. I'm sure we'll be back with our regular show in just a few moments While we're waiting, here's one of my favorites from the Doug Steffen Memory Vault.
Hi. Okay, we're back. We got dropped there on the line, and we were talking about Roosevelt or Eisenhower. This is from Eisenhower's campaign in 1952, as I recall, when he ran for president of the United States. And notice how he positioned himself.
He has met Europe's leaders, has got them working with us. Elect the number one man for the number one job of our time. November 4th, vote for peace.
The number one man who has worked with the leaders of Europe. He has met the leaders of Europe. He has worked together with them. Vote for peace, vote for Eisenhower. This was the vision that was being put forth by the Republican Party, that they were a party of peace. In fact, it was common when the Republicans engaged in Democrat bashing, to point out that virtually all of the wars of the 20th century and many of the wars of the 19th century had been started by Democrats. And the Republicans positioned themselves as the party of peace. What is the history of political vision in America? Well, it's interesting. As the vision was emerging, then we have this situation where during the Eisenhower administration, of course, Richard Nixon was the vice president for 8 years. And Richard Nixon then, in 1960, was running for president against John Fitzgerald Kennedy, John F. Kennedy. And one of the issues was the fact that America was living in apartheid, a segregated society. And that in 1954, 6 years before the 1960 election, during the Eisenhower-Nixon administration, the Supreme Court, in a case called Brown versus Board of Education, had ruled that it was illegal for the United States to have segregated schools. And very little had been done about this. So during the debate, during the second presidential debate between JFK and Richard Nixon, Kennedy brought this up and asked Nixon what he was going to do about this. Actually, one of the questioners, Kennedy brought it up, and one of the questioners asked Nixon what he would do about the problem of segregation in America. And Nixon says, and this has become the conservative refrain essentially ever since, that he would ask corporations to solve the problem, that government really had no role in that. Here, listen to what Nixon had to say about how he would solve the problem of racial segregation in the United States in 1960.
I have talked to Negro mothers. I've heard them try to explain how they tell their children how they can go into a store and buy a loaf of bread, but then can't go into that store and sit at the counter and get a Coca-Cola. This is wrong, and we have to do something about it. So under the circumstances, what do we do?
Yes, what do we do, Mr. Nixon? What do we do?
Well, what we do is what the Attorney General of the United States did under the direction of the President. Call in the owners of chain stores and get them to take action.
Call in the owners of the chain stores and get them to take action. Yes, those owners, they can just turn everything over to the corporations. We can't do anything ourselves. And now Kennedy has a response, a different response, and I'm not sure that we'll have enough time. Yeah, we're not going to have enough time in this segment to get it, because his response runs about a minute and a half. I'll give you a little taste of it. Here's the beginning of Kennedy's response to Nixon.
Senator Kennedy.
Well, Mr. Nixon hasn't discussed the two basic questions. What is going to be done and what will be his policy on implementing the Supreme Court decision of 1954?
Yes.
Giving aid to schools technically that are trying to carry out the decision is not the great question. Secondly, what's he going to do to provide fair employment? He's been the head of the Committee on Government Contracts. It's carried out two cases, both in the District of Columbia. He has not indicated his support of an attempt to provide fair employment practices around the country so that everyone can get a job regardless of their race or color.
And then Kennedy gets into what is the real question here, and what does real leadership mean, real, true political leadership on the American scene? Our question today, what is the history of political vision in America? You're listening to the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America Radio Network. It's about 20 minutes after the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Message is brought to you from American Atlantic Financial Corporation. Doesn't it pique your interest to discover how profits could potentially be made in markets like sugar, coffee, gold, foreign currencies, grains, unleaded gasoline, heating oil? Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive a free video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities at no cost or obligation by just dialing toll-free 1-888-247-8400. That's 1-888-247-8400. American Atlantic Financial Corporation specializes in identifying undervalued opportunities and brings them to qualified investors. Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive our latest recommendation. For your free investor's kit and video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities, call toll-free 1-888-247-8400. The call is free. The video is free by just dialing 1-888-247-8400. Futures and options involve significant risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Can you stand hearing a little bit of good news? It comes from an unlikely source. That massive tax bill that the Bushites just rammed through Congress, giving away at least $325 billion of our tax dollars to a handful of rich Americans that neither need nor deserve this windfall. But sometimes you can find a jewel in a junk pile. Tucked into Bush's massive giveaway to the Wall Street crowd is a little something that will help folks from our streets. It's a $20 billion provision to provide emergency aid for states that are grappling daily with our nation's growing health care crisis. Nearly every state in America is facing a budget squeeze, and to make ends meet, most legislatures are blindly whacking the budgets for health care programs that provide essential services to seniors, low-income children, people with disabilities, and others without health care coverage. In my state of Texas, for example, legislators, quote, fixed their budget shortfall by tossing some 250,000 children out of the state health care program. Out of sight, out of mind. It's children like these that the emergency health care money will help. But this $20 billion jewel didn't just appear in Bush's junk pile of a bill. It was placed there through a determined effort led by the men and women of the Service Employees International Union. Half of SEIU's members are nurses and other health care employees who are out on the front lines of meeting America's needs. And they are appalled that so many are being abandoned in a country that is so rich. So they forged a coalition with community groups, seniors, and others, and launched a Put Families First grassroots campaign, bombarding our Congress with thousands of personal appeals for decency, fairness, and sanity. This is Jim Hightower saying, insanely, the Bushites opposed this aid, but people power prevailed. When people get organized, we win. To join other fights for good health care, call SEIU 202-898-3200.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Program. If you'd like to be on the program today, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. You're listening to the Vast Radical Middle Conspiracy. Take no imitations. We were listening to, just a moment ago, Richard Nixon talk about how the solution to segregation in America in 1960 was to go to the heads of the chain stores and demand that they behave themselves. And Kennedy, in response, says, "You're missing the point, Mr. Nixon. The point is much larger than that." Let's listen to the rest of this little clip. It's just about a minute here of JFK in the second presidential debate, 1960.
Nor has he indicated that he would support Title III, which would give the Attorney General additional powers to protect constitutional rights.
Which Kennedy took on aggressively, by the way. Robert Kennedy, using Title III, desegregated America's schools in the early 1960s, or began the process that LBJ then finished. Or to the extent that you could say it's not finished even today. Actually, I would say very strongly that it's not. But he began the process anyway.
These are the great questions. Equality of education in school. About 2% of our population of white people is illiterate. 10% of our colored population. 60 to 70% of our colored children do not finish high school. These are the questions. In these areas that the North and the South, East and West are entitled to know, what will be the leadership of the president in these areas to provide equality of opportunity for employment, equality of opportunity in the field of housing, which could be done on all federal-supported housing by a stroke of the president's pen? What will be done to provide equality of education in all sections of the United States? Those are the questions to which the president must establish a moral tone and moral leadership. And I can assure you that if I'm elected president, we will do so.
Now, that was JFK in 1960, the second presidential debate between him and Richard Nixon. We're asking the question, what is the history of political vision in America? And the point that I want to make is that it's not, we can't just articulate what we're against. Progressives, liberals, middle of the road folks in America can't just say, oh, those nasty conservatives, they are just giving away our government and our country to those rich corporations and the mining interests. And you know, it's not enough. I mean, yeah, there's some legitimate complaints about the things that this administration is doing. There's a long list of them. Jim Hightower does a great job of articulating them, for example, as do others. But there has to be a positive vision, a clear and positive vision as well. So JFK goes ahead and says this, and there's an interesting response here from Ronald Reagan, if I have my clips right.
Yet any time you and I question the schemes of the do-gooders, we're denounced as being against their humanitarian goals. They say we're always against things, we're never for anything. Well, the trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant, it's just that they know so much that isn't so. Now,
that was one of Ronald Reagan's most famous lines. It was delivered in a 1964 speech. It wasn't the first time he'd said it. He'd been saying it for almost a decade. It was delivered in a 1964 speech introducing Barry Goldwater to the Republican convention where Goldwater was nominated. And that convention, that was a wild ride. And in there you see the seeds of the modern conservative movement. But Reagan in that identified the problem that the conservatives were facing in 1964. And that was that they didn't have a positive vision. That every time FDR came out and said, you know, we really ought to have Social Security, the conservatives just said, no, we shouldn't. And he said, well, you know, we really should have a minimum wage. And they said, no, we shouldn't. And he said, we really should have, a six-day work week or a five-day work week. And they said, no, we shouldn't. And they were always saying no. They were always fighting the initiatives of FDR and the, quote, liberals, certainly the Democrats. And so they had to begin articulating the positive vision. And I'm suggesting that it's time now for those on the left to come back to articulating their positive vision. What might that be? Here with the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. little bit more from JFK and Barry Goldwater.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
An author says we've caught most of the big fish in the oceans and we're starting to eat the bait. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Populations of cod, swordfish, and other highly prized ocean fish have fallen to 2 or 3% of their natural levels, according to author Daniel Pauly. As a result, people are fishing down the food web.
It's a term I coined in 1998 in a paper that described that globally, the fisheries are catching animals that are smaller and shorter-lived.
Pauly has written a new book called In a Perfect Ocean. He says we've taken most of the big predator fish, such as cod, and now we're fishing for their prey, things like herring and squid. And Pauly says fishers are having to settle for younger and smaller animals, things that until recently were used for bait.
A few years ago, a bait meant a little squid, right? And now it's called calamari. We consume the bait.
Pauly says we're even catching things that once seemed inedible, for example, jellyfish.
When I began to think about jellyfish, it was almost like a joke. You know, jellyfish, who would eat jellyfish? But actually people in East Asia do eat jellyfish, and they're being caught.
Pauly says North American fishing boats are now catching jellyfish for export to Asia. And he says the depletion of more and more species is cascading down the marine food web.
What you get is an ecosystem that is structurally different. Instead of a slow-lane ecosystem with large animals that change very little over time and which is highly predictable, you get an ecosystem that consists of very small things whose abundance fluctuates very rapidly. So it's an unpredictable system, and it's a largely unhealthy system.
Pauly says we need strong action to save ocean fisheries from further decline. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
The Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Like the pine trees lining the winding road, I've got a name. I've got a name. Like the singing bird and the croaking toad, I've got a name. I've got a name, and I carry it with me like my daddy did, but I'm living the dream that he kept here. Rolling me down the highway, rolling me down the highway.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. If you'd like to be on the program today, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. bringing you Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. We're talking today about the history of political vision in America, looking back on how it has formed and evolved over the years. We just heard we heard JFK and Nixon debating, and then we heard Reagan making his famous "Liberals are ignorant" speech. He had been saying that, as I said, for some time, and in response to that, at one point during a press conference, John Kennedy had a comment.
I did read that Mr. Reston's column in the Times, where Mr. Fulton Lewis had said that no one could get to the right of Barry Goldwater, but now I'm not so sure.
Yeah, so what about that Barry Goldwater and getting to the right of him? Well, this is Nelson Rockefeller. This was a real turning point for the Republican Party. This was 1964. I remember this. 1964. And Barry Goldwater was essentially poised to take over the Republican Party, and Nelson Rockefeller was having a fit. He was very concerned about it. Now, first of all, a platform was presented to the party denouncing the John Birch Society and the Ku Klux Klan. This platform was voted down. It was rejected by 2-1. Then Pennsylvania Senator Hugh Scott proposed an amendment to the platform of the Republican Party in 1964, calling for voting guarantees in both state and federal elections for people of all colors, all races. That was rejected by an 897-409 vote margin. Civil Rights Amendment. Then Governor Nelson Rockefeller stood up to address the conference. And he starts out saying, "During this year, I have crisscrossed this nation, fighting to keep the Republican Party the party of all the people and warning of the extremist threat. It's a danger to the party." And at that point, the crowd begins to boo. And reading from the transcript here, the official transcript, after a swelling chorus of boos, the chairman of the Republican Party walks up to the platform, talks to Rockefeller, and then bangs his gavel, demanding order. "The chair must act for order. We are not going to have several speakers here on various amendments. We must proceed in an orderly manner. It's only fair and right for all concerned." And then Rockefeller says, "It's danger to the party and it's danger to the nation. The methods of these extremist elements I have experienced firsthand." The crowd boos again. "That's right. Their tactics have ranged from cancellation by coercion of a speaking engagement before a college to outright threats of personal violence." The crowd boos again. Nelson Rockefeller. The chair steps forward and says, "The governor's entitled to be heard for 5 minutes." Now, he can't be heard for 5 minutes. We're going to have these constant interruptions. Rockefeller says, "Thank you, Mr. Chairman." He gets booed again. And I'll come back and give you the rest of this. We got a couple of callers on the line. We'll get back to Nelson Rockefeller and then to Barry. And then we're going to hear Barry Goldwater. Linda in Cupertino is on the line. She's called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Welcome, Linda, to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. There are some issues that are, I think, going to be driving issues in the 2004 election, and I don't know if any of the Democrats are really picking up on it yet and making some simple to remember slogans or campaign slogans that they can put out there to get the American people interested this year. And those are like the baby boomers are going to retire soon. They have health care and social security issues that are very important to them. And they're also noticing that their income has been flat or has been falling over the last, 20 years.
As has pretty much everybody's who makes under 80 or 90,000 a year.
Everybody. And I feel that what the Dems are not doing are two things that are so simple that these former presidents were able to do, which is they took the high road. They really took the high road, meaning they rested the premise for all debate on high principles of the U.S.
And they got ambushed as a result of doing that. The Republicans just came in and ate their lunch. So we're going to talk about practical stuff here, tax cuts, instead of philosophy and high road things.
No, no. High road as the underpinning of these very basic things like better wages, protection of their health care benefits and of Social Security. And the other thing the Dems must do that they're not doing yet is unify. They
yes.
must unify. Now, how can we get these people to unify? How can we tell them that if they don't have a unified front, and if they don't sound respected, and if they don't sound like leaders, if they don't sound like diplomats, if they don't sound like people that you want to put in charge of the government, how the heck are the voters going to be interested in voting for them?
Yeah, I agree with you, Linda, 100%, and I appreciate your calling. Thank you very much for calling into the program. This is a real problem. I wrote a piece about this for Common Dreams a few months ago called How to Take Back America. If you go to commondreams.org and scroll down to my name down on the right-hand side as contributors and click on that, you'll find the How to Take Back America article about the need for unifying. But frankly, I think that it's going to take a leader to do it, and that's probably going to emerge after the Democratic primaries. Tony in Illinois calling about this topic. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program, Tony.
Hey, Tom. This is the first time calling in. Love your show.
Thank you.
I tell you what, it's so refreshing to hear, first of all, of course, a progressive or, as you call yourself, a middle-of-the-road kind of guy.
Thanks, Tony. Tony, are you listening on WINI there in Carbondale?
No. Actually, I'm on your internet station.
Oh, okay. Great.
I live in Waukegan, which is like real close to the Wisconsin border, Chicagoland.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
We have WLS and, you know.
Right.
Anyway.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, we don't have a radio terrestrial station for you here yet, mm-hmm. but hopefully we will soon.
One day soon. There you go.
Speaking about leadership, I was watching on C-SPAN. They had the Democratic candidates speaking at a picnic function over in Iowa. And a couple of those guys really are good. I really like Howard Dean. I think he's really going to do something with us in 2004. And I think Kucinich is also cool. Those two guys, you want to talk about leadership in our party, I think if we're going to get it, I think it's going to come from one, if not both, of these men.
Yeah, a friend of mine, Rob Call, the guy who publishes opednews.com, was at the conference in Washington, D.C. last week, and he heard all of the speakers, all of the Democratic candidates speak. And he said Kucinich was just incredible. He gave a great speech. And of course, I like Kucinich. I like Howard Dean. I'll vote for any of them, frankly, but those are my preferences.
Well, I tell you what, as you're talking about the topics today, it's so interesting to get a historical perspective. And mm-hmm. I wish that I could get some of my conservative friends to listen to this because they feel, like this is always, every conservative note that the Republican Party puts out today, this is the way it's always been, the way it's always been presented. And they just don't have that historical perspective. And I don't think we do as liberals either, but I think we have a better understanding, and at least we're willing to look into it. And I think you're providing a valuable service for that.
Well, thank you, Tony. And we have archives of these shows. I'll pop the archive of this particular program up on our website. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it, and thank you for listening also to the program. Listening in, whether Tony is on the internet and other folks on actual land-based stations. Back to Nelson Rockefeller. He's at the 1964 Republican National Convention, and they're about to nominate Barry Goldwater. And he says, "This is Nelson Rockefeller, and he's pleading for moderation." He says, "This is still a free country, ladies and gentlemen." Crowd boos. "These things, ladies and gentlemen, have no place in America. But I can personally testify to their experience, and so can countless others who have experienced anonymous midnight and early morning threats." Threatening phone calls. That's right. The crowd boos. Unsigned and threatening letters, smear and hate literature, strong-arm goon tactics, bomb threats, bombings, infiltration and takeover of established political organizations. The crowd boos. "Some of you don't like to hear it, ladies and gentlemen, but it's the truth," says Nelson Rockefeller. "These extremists feed on fear, hate, and terror. There is no place for this in the Republican Party, for such hawkers of hate, such purveyors of prejudice, such fabricators of fear." The crowd boos. "Whether communist, Ku Klux Klan, or Birchers," the crowd boos and begins a continuous chant of "We want Barry." Rockefeller continues, there is no place in this Republican Party for those who would infiltrate its ranks, distort its aims, and convert it in a cloak of apparent respectability to a dangerous extremism. And make no mistake about it, the hidden members of the John Birch Society and others like them are out to do just that. And at that point, the chairman steps in and says, your time, Mr. Rockefeller, has expired. So then they brought out Barry Goldwater, and Barry Goldwater, in defense of himself, because Nelson Rockefeller had just talked about the dangers of extremism, said,
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
And the crowd went absolutely nuts for a full minute of screaming applause. And then he wrapped up saying,
and let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
And they love Barry Goldwater. I thought pretty highly of Barry Goldwater, too. I confess I was 13 in 1964, and I went door-to-door passing out literature for his campaign. And so I've seen this from both sides. Democrat Lyndon Johnson, a few years later, said, he paraphrased Goldwater, he said, extremism in the pursuit of the presidency is an unpardonable vice. Moderation in the affairs of the nation is the highest virtue. Sort of a different viewpoint than Goldwater had carried into this thing. So now we have, just to wrap this up, and by the way, if you have any thoughts on this, if you'd like to be on the program today, our question, what is the history of political vision in America? The number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. I'd like to just wrap up this whole montage, this audio montage, as it will, that we've been listening to, with a piece from Franklin Roosevelt, going back to the 1930s. This is from his 1936 acceptance speech in Philadelphia for his second term as President of the United States before the Democratic National Convention in 1936 in Philadelphia. And I think that, and the reason I want to play this is because I think that we are here again. There are these cycles that happen in the history of America. We see the battles between, they call themselves the paleocons and the neocons, the old conservatives and the new conservatives. We see the battles between the liberals and progressive. We see the battles between the swing of America from right to left and right to left, the swing almost into a fascistic state under John Adams when he passed the Alien and Sedition Acts and threw into jail more than a dozen newspaper publishers who published editorials against him, threw into jail a guy in a bar as Adams walked by. The guy made a rude comment about Adams. Adams threw him in prison for 2 years. Thomas Jefferson, when he came into office, pardoned the guy, let out of jail all the people that Adams had put in jail for writing things about Adams. And so the country had swung hard to the right during the Adams administration, although you won't find that, by the way, in the Republican biographies of Adams, like John Adams by Mr. McCollum. These are whitewashings of history, but go back and just read the real history. Not the modern ones, but the real ones. Read an encyclopedia, for that matter. And Jefferson came along, and the country swung back to an idea of liberty. And then the same cycle happened in the 1830s leading up to the Civil War. We swung hard to the right, and then we came back with, some would say, Lincoln. And then we swung back to the right with the robber barons, and then we came back with the progressives around the turn of the 20th century. And then all the way back with FDR. And so here now, Franklin Roosevelt.
There is a mysterious cycle in human events. To some generations, much is given. Of other generations, much is expected. This generation of Americans has a rendezvous with destiny.
And I believe we're back there again, that we have a rendezvous with destiny, that if we don't return America to the ideals of democracy and liberty, we got a big problem. And we can. I am absolutely convinced we can. Rob is on the phone from Newtown, Pennsylvania. Rob, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom.
Got about
how
a minute and a half here, Rob. I'm great. How are you?
Great job with these tapes of the old speeches. You know, you
thanks.
Mentioned...
I spent most of the day yesterday putting these things together.
Awesome. It was worth it. They're super. You mentioned my observations at the Take Back America conference on the different candidates.
Yes.
I'll tell you, one thing that I left there after 2 days of being there with 1,000 progressives really psyched. And the one message that I took back, probably more important than any of the others, is that we have 17 months to make a difference to change the regime in Washington. And like you say, I agree. I could go with any of the Democratic candidates who I heard or who are running. But the thing is, we've all got to...
Got about 10 seconds here, Rob.
We all have to look at our lives and see how we can make a difference in that time, because we could have 12 more years of Bush, and that's a horrible thought.
Yeah, between...
Great job, Tom. Thanks.
Between George and Jeb. Thanks, Rob, for sharing that. That's Rob Call of opednews.com. Thank you, Rob, for calling in. You're with the Tom Hartman program, where democracy is still alive and well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Tonight at 9 Eastern, live from Australia, Animal Planet makes television history with Croc Hunter Live. It's uncut, unedited, and unpredictable. Animal Planet's Steve Irwin relocates deadly crocodiles, and you can watch it all live. We don't know what will happen tonight, and neither does he. Croc Hunter Live, the most dangerous week on television, starts tonight at 9 Eastern, only on Animal Planet.
Hi, this is Peter Werby from the IE America Radio Network, wondering whether you've heard about In These Times magazine. A bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. Find out what you're missing. Visit them online at www.inthesetimes.com or call them toll-free at 1-800-827-0270.
I would like to see a law that says your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
Doug Stephens, good day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We can do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Turn on the lights. Take off the lights. Come over here. Stand on that chair. Yes, that's right.
To the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle on the IE America Radio Network. Channel 145 on the Sirius satellite, Sirius radio receiver satellite, broadcasting all across North America. And in our chat room, there's some interesting conversations here. Some folks talking about, you know, why is it that the Republicans are obsessed with Clinton? Well, because he was successful. Is Clinton a liberal? No, I think he was a conservative, or let's say kind of a mixture of the two. I am to this day horrified by two major events of the Clinton administration, one being his aggressive work to pass GATT and NAFTA and WTO by virtue of that. And the second being the 1996 Telecommunications Act, which followed on deregulation of the Reagan era and was extremely destructive, in my opinion. It's interesting, when I was listening to these tapes yesterday, over the weekend, I spent part of Saturday, most of Sunday, putting these things together, and I was listening to these long speeches by these various politicians, and there's a fascinating speech by FDR. And if the Supreme Court justices step down, the belief is right now that probably Rehnquist and Sandra Day O'Connor are going to step down at the end of the June term. And if that happens, then we'll revisit some of the comments that Franklin Roosevelt made. But he was talking about how many of his proposals were being upheld by the Supreme Court by a single vote. And he came before the American people and basically said, I want your help in packing the Supreme Court. You've got to let the Congress know. Now, what was different was that Roosevelt was saying, this is my agenda. This is what I want to do. If you agree with it, help me to get these people onto the Supreme Court by putting pressure on your elected representatives. What's happening now with this administration is we're not hearing this is my agenda. We're just hearing we're going to cut your taxes. There is tremendous hope here if people will just start speaking out and being positive. If you want to change things, get out and vote. If you're not registered, register. Tune back in tomorrow, same time, same place. You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us.
listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.